This is the Teachable Soul Podcast. Because we cannot possibly live long enough to make all the mistakes ourselves, let's take a few moments to learn from the mistakes of others. The Teachable Soul Podcast, where guests and listeners like you share stories of failure and teachable moments on the journey to success. Here's your host, Kat Daniels.
Hello, my fellow teachable souls. I want to welcome you all back. It's been a while since I've posted an episode, so I just wanted to real quick remind you guys to please rate and review the podcast anywhere you listen if you can, if you like it. That way I can keep doing it. Also, follow me along on social media. You can find me on Twitter as Teachable Soul and anywhere else as The Teachable Soul, including the website, which is theteachablesoul.com. If you'd like to sign up for our email list, which I just recently started, for updates on the show or anything like that, you can on the website. I promise I will not use your email address very often. Now that we are back and ready to rock and roll, our first guest for this season is a jack of many trades, but most supremely, the Flow Ninja. He helps heart-based leaders and visionaries activate their multidimensional magnificence and accelerate their awakening process. So I want to welcome Jody Dean. Thank you for joining us today.
Great to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. I could not have asked for a more perfect guest for this first episode for this season.
Oh, you're too kind, Catherine.
Oh, no. Not at all. So I kind of wanted to start off, maybe I don't know where to really start. So let's just start with what you do now and kind of go into how you got there, because what I'm fascinated by what you do and what you offer, partially because, of course, the reason I started this podcast was because I was going through an awakening process of my own. And the podcast was really so I could have conversations with other people who are already in it and I didn't really have to pay them to do it. So, Right. So I wanted to talk to you about sort of how you do coaching, but you also mentioned a mentor program that you have. So how did you get started in that genre or area?
Sure. I mean, it is a long story. So, but you know, what I do now is I coach and mentor heart-based leaders, entrepreneurs, and visionaries to activate that multi-dimensional magnificence that lies inside all of us and accelerate the awakening process, which may already be in full swing.
So those are all very big words. What do all of those exactly or individually really mean to you?
Great, great questions. And I think it's really important to simplify as much as possible to not have assumptions about the meanings of things and not to gloss over a meaning if we don't understand it. And yeah, I think that's so important to get specific. So multidimensional is, you know, this is something that was coming to me when I was a teenager, because I had this wonderful psychic mentor when I was 18. I used to go to this weekly metaphysics group. And they used to keep drilling it in, like, you are multidimensional beings. And it sounded kind of cool and fun and exciting and different. And it sounded really like, yeah, this is so cool. But I was just like, I was very much in the beginning moments of understanding what that meant and having experiences, right, for the first time in my life. After having years of reading around it, which I got into when I was a child, still a child, like 11, 12 years old, I got really interested in metaphysics, the supernatural, UFOs, crop circles, sacred sites, energy fields, anything like that, that was kind of fringe, different, beyond the mainstream. It's just something that was really calling me. And I just had this fascination and curiosity. And I didn't even know why. I just like, well, this is just so interesting.
Yeah.
And I want to know more. So I just went and got loads of books out of the library, because that's where you went for your information at that time.
Yeah.
And I started researching and reading and reading. And then one book led to another. And then a conversation here with a friend. And you know, my friend at school who I was sharing a room with, when we were like 12, he was like, hey, crystals heal you and like UFOs are real and yeah, things like this. And I was like, yeah, I know. Cause I've been reading about it. And he's like, yeah. And then he's like, read this book. And I'm like, oh, okay. Started reading this book and oh, just like goes on and on and on like that. Right. Just like down the rabbit hole we go.
Right.
all this while doing a, you know, normal, formal, secondary, private education, you know, just being, you know, taught how to read and write and be critical and all that sort of stuff and function in the system. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back to my 18-year-old self. And at this point, it was more about the experiences because I realized that's obviously like where the rubber hits the road. Mm-hmm. And so this mentor of mine, Sandy, was going on about you're a multidimensional being and everything else. And I had certain experiences in that metaphysics group. And when I say metaphysics, that's also another thing that at the time I was like, what is metaphysics? I don't understand what that word means.
Yeah.
And of course that means everything that is phenomena that is, again, it's the nature of reality and existence. So it could be things explained by science as well as things that are not explained by science. And because the things that are not explained by science are just things that I believe that still haven't been measured and found out, basically.
I just like to call that magic.
Yeah, we can call it magic, metaphysics, whatever we like. Yeah, right. It's words, isn't it?
That's more fun if you say magic to me.
Yeah, right. I'm all about the magic as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this multidimensional thing really means, you know, all of those things like the energy body, the intuition, the sensing and feeling and knowing things. Mm-hmm. It can be about having experiences with, you know, a being that is non-physical. It could be opening up to the power of healing, to the power of meditation, all of that, which we when we go beyond the physical 3D realm, we tap into and tune into. So I guess that's what that means, the multidimensional.
Right.
And it can be a whole host of things.
Right. So when I first kind of started down this journey and started learning, and mind you, I am nowhere near your level of knowledge on this, but when I started down it, I kind of struggled through it because, I mean, I'm an adult now and, you know, have been an adult through this journey. So now I'm struggling still through like my logical side of my brain that wants to understand why everything happens, even though sometimes you just can't. So did you, I mean, you kind of went through this when you were like 12 and in your teenage years. So did you go through something similar or did you have anyone that was like, you know, telling you to be more logical or be more, you know, black and white or anything like that?
Yeah. No, I didn't actually.
Real? That's awesome.
I know, right? There was no one who was there going, oh no, this is ridiculous. You know, I mean, there were things I would discuss with my dad, but and that he would be interested. I mean, probably my grandfather would be probably the, but even so, it was still, there was still very much a kind of an openness to it all. So I can't relate to that. I didn't have that. And I think that's also just was so helpful to me.
Yeah.
To not have a kind of a badgering influence in that way. So I was felt free to just to explore and expand in those ways without fear or shame.
Right.
And also, I mean, I was obviously aware of the prevailing ideologies and systems in place through being in, you know, a formal education and everything else. I was aware, like, what I could talk about in, you know, public and what I couldn't as well, right? Because, the you know, people don't have the reference points to talk about certain things. So, you know, they need to be softened up.
Right. You got to ease them into it.
Exactly. Yeah. You got to ease them into it. Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. So That's so interesting. So you mentioned when you were 12 that you were sharing a room with another boy. Were you in a private like boarding school?
Yeah, it was a boarding school. Yeah.
Oh, okay. So how did you only like start there from the age of 12 or did you go?
Yeah, at 11 years old. Yeah. Me and my brother went into the same boarding school.
Oh, okay. I'm not sure how boarding schools work. I've never been to one. Sorry.
No, that's all right. Yeah. You know, yeah. go home at the end of term, you know, or half term. Mm. And then come back. There were people from all over the UK and a few people from around the world as well. Right. Going there. It was in York, in North Yorkshire, in the north of England. It was a Quaker school, so it was fairly relaxed. There wasn't really a proper uniform. There would be a period of silence in the mornings, like an assembly with the silent period, which was actually really nice, just kind of like to start the day in that way.
Right, for sure.
Christian based, right? But definitely not evangelical in any way, in the sense of, yeah, everyone must, you know, whatever, mm-hmm. right? But it was just because, you know, Quakerism is a very open-minded version of Christianity, and it's up to everyone to have their own, build and develop their own relationship with something bigger than themselves that might be called God or the Holy Spirit or something like that.
Oh.
Yeah, and they do like have a Bible on the table, which is, you know, there for reference and to read if you want to during the meetings, but there's no like full-on Bible study. I mean, there may have been 100, 200 years ago, but there certainly isn't like the character of it now. They have their own kind of book called Quaker Faith and Practice, which is a kind of amalgamation of things that have kind of come to work in the society. It's called the Society of Friends, which are based around kind of having faith and ethics and things mm-hmm. like that. I haven't read it. Sorry.
That's okay. No need to apologize to me. I'm just learning it exists. So
yeah, but actually what was really cool, which I really I'm thankful for, because actually for me the school wasn't Quaker enough, because we had a new headmaster who came in after the first year and he was actually a Methodist, and I was like, why would you have like the person who runs the school be not being a Quaker? I was just like, I don't understand this. But anyway, it was just the way things were, and I did crave a bit more kind of Quakerism, and yeah, but at the same time, I wasn't like a massive Quaker either, but my parents were both Quakers and still are, actually. And what I was going to say was that, yeah, what was so cool, actually, was that they took us on Sundays to different religious meetings. So I remember going to like literally an evangelical church.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to... a few different churches, and also when I was on a week program, which was a camp in the summer, we got taken to wasn't part of the school, but it was a Quaker thing, with my mum as well came along. We got taken to like a Sikh temple, and a mosque as well. And things like that. They were very much into kind of like, look, these are people over here and they think about this and they believe this, and there are these people over here, and you know, it was very much about like tolerance and understanding other people's viewpoints and beliefs and everything. I found that very healthy, and yeah, and they were also, those people were really like pleased that people like us came and, you know, had a sample of their way of life and or their belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
That was very cool. I really value that.
Man, I bet that I grew up in a, what we call over here, a non-denominational church, where basically you can believe any religion that you want, but it's all generally based in Christian faith of some to some degree.
Hmm.
But everybody who went to the non-denominational church still almost always believed in the same like titles and everything. you know, like God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit and or the Holy Ghost and things like that. And so I never was really introduced to a lot of other religions that were outside of that realm. And actually, I was told if there was another religion outside of that realm, it was basically a cult to some degree, or, you know, they were like witchcraft was considered, you know, they worship the devil or something like that, growing up. And so I had to seek out information as an adult and figure out, you know, the difference between black, white, and gray on my own, kind of.
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah. And so, that education is incredibly invaluable, essentially, because not only does not everybody get to have it, not everybody, you know, always exposes themselves to it after they've moved on, you know, in life from their parents and being taught what they were taught. So I was going to ask you what caused your own awakening, but it kind of sounds like you were born in an environment that just allowed you to be that way the whole time.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, part of it is happenstance or destiny. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing I can say is like my dad, he's Irish. Mm. He grew up in Dublin in a staunch Protestant foster family. Oh. And as a foster child, and in Dublin obviously is majority Catholic, as the Republic of Ireland is, you know, a Catholic country. And yeah, I mean, obviously the whole aspect of religion in Ireland is a biggie, because obviously the Northern Ireland and everything is predominantly Protestant and, you know, loyal to the UK and the Anglican Church and all of that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a massive, you know, thing and divide, right. You know, whether you're Catholic or Protestant in Ireland. And my dad used to get literally beaten up on the way home from school because he was Protestant.
Wow.
And his foster mother used to go out to the main square in Dublin on a Sunday with placards, stand on a soapbox and tell all these heathen Catholics that they were going to go to hell and that the Pope was the Antichrist. So, wow. Yeah. So he grew up in that environment. He thought these people are mad.
Right. I
bet. These people are bonkers. You couldn't wait to get out of that. And he's recounted this story to me a number of times, that when he was a teenager, about 15 years old, I believe, he had an aunt that came to visit him. Words to this effect, that, you know, an aunt came and took him to the Quaker meeting house in Dublin, because there is one. Mm-hmm. And he went in there and he was taken aback by, wow, this is like not in your face, and I'm not being told this or that. And there's a library there, and he said there were magazines of religions from all around the world in this library. Mm. And he was blown away. He was just like, oh my God, this is like food for my soul, that there's such open-mindedness and tolerance. And right. That was kind of what turned him on to Quakerism, and has been, I think, a real inspiration for him throughout his life. And my mum she got involved as well. And so that's how it all kind of happened. It's funny, my mum, literally, as I say my mother's name, my phone says, "Mother is calling you."
Her ears must have been burning.
Yeah, how bizarre is that? The synchronicity, literally, right? The same millisecond.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mothers have that magical power, though, I have noticed.
They absolutely do. They absolutely do. That's the kind of religious environment my dad came from. And I think he was very keen that me, my brother, and my sister grew up in a tolerant, open-minded environment, and we didn't have to go through the same kind of craziness that he experienced as a child. Mm-hmm. And it was his choice, you know, like for us to go to that. Well, we were you know, we were kind of encouraged to go somewhere like that, that to that school. So
yeah,
that, I think that was a big thing. But the other thing was that my mum had a couple of friends who I still am in contact with, I still know, and they were kind of self-confessed pagans, and they were astrologers as well. Mm-hmm. So that was going on as well. Like, you know, there were these conversations about astrology and paganism and stuff in my early years. And I was just kind of, I was in that environment absorbing that. And I definitely piqued my interest. And that's actually what got me on the kind of the thread of like, what is all this stuff about? And like, how can I find out more about it? And that's kind of, I think that was the linchpin that got me going to the library and finding these books. And I read this book on witchcraft when I was 12 in the Channel Islands, which is Jersey, which is where I was brought up, mm-hmm. which is the British Isles, Channel Islands, not the ones off the coast of California.
Right.
yeah, so the funny thing about that was, yeah, I was reading about that there was a family of witches in Massachusetts, actually.
Right.
Which were a Jersey kind of line, or, you know, bloodline, that had come over, Cabot, C-A-B-O-T. And there was I thought that was really interesting, because my brother had just seen like a horror film based in Salem's Lot, I think, based in Massachusetts, which is sort of witchcraft and all that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I was like, oh my God, maybe, you know, those witches maybe came from Jersey originally. Who knows? But it was just quite an interesting link.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, so I just got interested particularly in the paganism and then the sacred sites as well. And actually, where I was brought up in Jersey, there are scores and scores and scores of these sacred sites, and I was fascinated by them. And they had a map in the book on these Haunted Isles is the name of the book. You can still buy it online. And it was of ley lines in Jersey. And I was like, what are these ley lines? What are these energy lines? What's this all about? And, oh, they're going through this place. Oh, mum, can we go to this, visit this sacred site? You know, it's only like a couple of miles away. You know, really want to go. And I was like, I remember going to this sacred site and just like literally this big megalithic dolmen. And it's like, what is this all about? What's meant to happen here? What happened? You know, what was all the, like, trying to, like, oh, I think you're really like, this is a puzzle I need to work out.
Yeah.
you know, this, hence the fascination continued like that. And it's gone on all my life, actually. So yeah, hope that answers some of the questions.
Yeah.
It probably gives you more questions than answers, but.
Oh man. Yeah, of course. But that's good. That's okay.
Yeah.
I just recently started kind of actually digging into like witchcraft and the history of witches here in America, because it's fairly minuscule what I can find for here in America anyway, because of the Salem witch trials. And so, yeah, so it kind of seems like once the Salem witch trials happened, everybody just like quit talking about witchcraft altogether over here, unless you dig very deep in some very different internet holes, basically. So I've been learning about it, but now I've moved on to trying to learn more about what happened or what started it in Europe and what happened with witchcraft, you know, before that. And yeah, it's a very, very interesting path. So yeah, so I've been learning about, you know, witches just recently and kind of going into where religion started and came from, because my brother, he originally had gone to school to learn, I mean, to like become a pastor in a church. And then he learned a lot of things that he didn't like and was like, I'm washing my hands of all of this. And so he has taught me quite a few things. So religiously, or however you want to phrase it, where do you stand exactly? What do you believe?
Yeah. So I know this is probably seen as a cop out, but I try not to believe in anything.
Okay.
I love to entertain ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the most empowering stance, if you will. Because I entertain lots of things. Mm-hmm. I entertain belief systems, mm-hmm. but I try not to believe in anything, because what life has taught me is that beliefs are filters, mm-hmm. And I want the truth. Right. So it's one of those. Okay. And you might find me talking about, oh, I strongly believe in this. And so it's a paradox. It's, you know, please accuse me of being a hypocrite. It keeps me humble.
No, that's okay. I ask because, you know, we were talking earlier about like how your parents were raised, and even before, you know, we started recording, we were talking about some things, and it always amazes me how our brains as human beings try to compartmentalize and even sure. divide on our own without anyone even trying to come along and intervene in that process. You know, we try to separate things for some reason into categories, almost automatically in some.
Oh, instances. Yeah. That's yeah. it, isn't it? That is yeah. the way the human mind works. Mm-hmm. I mean, we all hold these different truths, and so, you know, I realize I hold several, and they may not all be compatible with each other, mm-hmm. but that's totally fine. That's the contradiction of being human,
right?
So, you know, on one level, I completely bow down to the oneness of all creation, mm-hmm. and that is the eternal truth, that all is one. And that separation is an illusion. Mm-hmm. So if you want to call that God, be my guest. If you want to call that Holy Spirit, Allah, mm-hmm. whatever, Jesus, Krishna, mm-hmm. fine, whatever.
Right.
The eternal creative intelligence, if you want to call it that as well. It's so easy, though, to kind of get tied up in definitions and ideas and everything else. And the thing is that it becomes this thing where we cling onto an idea, and an idea is the definition of separation. So we're clinging onto separation by clinging onto these ideas. So that's, you know, me being mercilessly frank. Hopefully it's merciful as well in the mercilessness.
Right, those contradictions, yes. All at the yeah. same time.
And that, who am I? Well, I am one concentrated aspect of this eternal unified consciousness, centered in my heart. Mm-hmm. And that everything in reality is just a mirror back to me as well, right? So then who are you, right? So, right. But the thing is like it's up to the individual to find that out for themselves, and that is what's so sacred to me is for every single one of us to have the space and the encouragement to find that out for themselves, for ourselves, what is true for us. Because absolutely what is true for me may not be true for you. And that is, you know, absolutely bow down to that and honor that. What is ever, whatever is your truth or anyone's truth is mm-hmm. so, that is so sacred to me.
Right. That's awesome. So one question that I have for you is multidimensional. What does that mean exactly?
So I guess it means ability to experience and be in different dimensions of existence.
And how does that work?
So that could be you're sitting in meditation and you go into another realm, you experience another reality through your ESP, your extrasensory perception, through your pineal gland or maybe some other energetic phenomenon that happens. Maybe you start seeing lights or angels. Maybe you experience past lives. Maybe you connect with extra-dimensional entities, right? Yeah, it's just that. and more. Maybe you want to experience more 5D living, as in fifth dimensional living, which is, okay, so then, so I present to you this idea that the Earth is going through a global transformation, that the frequencies of the Earth are being raised through the Earth's passage through time and space in the galaxy, and that we're going through on this planet a amped up energy frequency, and which, you know, has been loosely termed the photon belt, different names for it. And this is actually something that's been measured by people like NASA, that we are going through this and it is affecting our brain waves. And so there is a scientific measurement element to this, but there's also, you know, so much more to it than that. And this increasing of vibration, this amping up of frequency is, so there's the idea that this amping up of frequency is this shift to a fifth dimensional world, fifth dimensional planet, fifth dimensional living, which is the, what they call the ascension. And the ascension is literally going up, right? So this is raising the frequency to a point where we are experiencing a completely different reality to the 3D physical programming that we have been experiencing on this planet for a very long time. And this means that we live in an expanded sense of oneness and have that heart intelligence and emotional intelligence much more integrated into our existence, and that we begin to experience abilities which have hitherto for been unavailable to us in the 3D physical realm. So this is obviously something that's been talked about, written about ad infinitum recently, the last, say, 20, 30 years particularly. And a lot of people are, you know, channeling this information. It's been prophesied in many ancient texts and a lot of the legends, well, maybe myths, stories, ancient stories from different native cultures, that this will take place. You know, it's the coming of the fifth sun in the Mayan culture. And yeah, it is a literally, you know, I mean, the Mayans charted it very well, that, you know, connected with the kind of the galactic wheel, the precession of the equinoxes. This, we have this 26,000 year cycle, which represents this opportunity for transformation, for awakening. And it's like this idea about this sort of critical mass, right? If enough people wake up, if they, enough people realize their innate truth, that they are not this limited idea of a small self struggling in the world, that they are spirit, and they wake up to that, that actually helps shift the whole Earth into this kind of new frequency, these upper kind of levels of frequency, the fifth dimension, they call it. And yeah, that's basically what's going on now. And that's also, you know, one reason why such craziness is happening in 2020.
Right. Yeah.
And 2020, by the way, was a date that was prophesized. 2012 was prophesized and talked about, but also 2020. And I remember being very curious. Ooh, I wonder what's going to happen in 2020, way back like 15, 20 years ago. Ooh, 2020 is going to be interesting. Can't wait for that. Wasn't quite the thing I was expecting.
Oh, I bet not. Yeah, I could feel, I mean, I honestly, I could feel the energy of it coming, and but I mistook it. I thought it was going to be like phenomenal. It's going to be great. Like all of the good things that were meant to ever happen in the world are going to happen this year. And I mean, I guess it's great in a way. It just was not in the way I was anticipating at all.
Right. Yeah. That's the thing. It's like a shaking off.
Yeah.
That's the way I see it. It's a shaking off of everything, a shaking up and a shaking off.
Yeah, for sure. It is definitely a huge year for change, and human beings don't have a great history with acting great when change happens. So,
no, yeah, it tends to sort of, gravitate towards the kind of fear survival frequency.
Yeah, definitely. So this is one of the things that I struggle with. So how do you know the difference between experiencing things like that and just like your brain coming up with its own story or narrative or you know, what? How do you tell the differences?
This is the ultimate question, really, because I'm sure this question is in a lot of people's minds who are not au fait, let's say, with the kind of multidimensional aspects of who they are. Perhaps they're curious about it, but it's something that's still a mystery. But they're like, what is that? Why is everyone talking? Are these people just all completely bonkers and crazy? Or is something going on that I'm not party to? Like, is all this new age just nonsense? People grasping for some meaning where there is none, and other people just profiting from making up stories and, you know, creatively putting things, narratives together and going, yeah, this is going on. And yeah, these beings, they talk to me, and it's all a load of, you know, bunkum underneath. Or is there actually something genuine going on? And I think a lot of people are in that situation. So it is the ultimate brilliant question, really. So thank you for naming it and asking it, Catherine.
Oh, of course. I'm in that space where I'm interested, and I know that something else is going on that I just simply can't explain. I just don't know what it is. So yeah. I'm open and accepting of anything and every answer that I can possibly find at this point.
Great. Well, I'm glad you are. So, I mean, for me, the whole thing about direct experience has been central to my own awakening. So I had to experience things directly. And, you know, because I grew up in the formal education system, and I certainly wasn't having conscious psychic experiences as a child. Had a lot of curiosity, but I wasn't seeing beings, and, you know, like some people do have that.
Right.
But I wasn't having that. So I was fully in the matrix.
Right.
But with a massive curiosity. And I had to start experiencing things to go, oh, okay, this is something here, right? There's something going on here. And I will say that the experiences I had through substances did assist me and help me to see beyond the accustomed or the reality that I was accustomed to through my five senses. So that was something, psychedelics particularly. But it went beyond that. I mean, yoga helped a lot, because that does help them to awaken the kind of prana and the energy body in the kundalini. And this is a visceral experience when it happens. It's something that's undeniable. And I think that's also why yoga is so popular, because it's a palpable experience that you feel physically through your body. And I think, you know, yoga is responsible for waking a lot of people up and switching them on to the alternative realities that are available. They just go to a yoga class, think, oh, that's what everyone's doing. Maybe I'll, you know, reduce my stress or get fit, whatever. And then a year later, they're like, oh my God, chakras are real. Everything's real. I just, I feel all this energy moving through me. And that's basically what I was experiencing myself through doing yoga and also through healing as well, learning to do healing in the metaphysics group I was involved with. And yeah, just something, some profound shifts happened to me, and I was opened up to energy and had experiences where I was perceiving beyond the habitual reality and was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, I want to know more. And obviously I was reading more books as well. But ultimately I realized that I the truth that I searched for or was seeking could not be found in books.
Right.
It's like you can't taste honey by reading the word honey.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something that, yeah, hit home to me when I started to experience these things. And then I was kind of, yeah, got addicted, if you will. And yeah, just trained in a few different modalities, shiatsu, which is Japanese acupressure, and also creative arts psychotherapy, and other permutations of kind of energy healing as well, and Reiki, and so forth. And so again, this is like, you know, you go step by step and going, oh, okay, this feels really good. I want more of this. I'll try more of that. I'll do more of that. I'll have a session of that, or I'll do this training. And you learn so much. And then, right, okay, where to now? Right, what's next? And it went like that from one thing to another. And I think that's actually what happens for a lot of people.
Yeah.
So it was a gradual thing, but I will say that through doing this tantric yoga, that when I was around the age of 20, when I actually moved to London for the first time and I was doing these courses, I was having such an intense kundalini experience with the yoga. I was doing it daily and doing breath work, that I got to the point where I had to stop doing the yoga because it was getting a bit ridiculous. I was so sensitive and energetically open that I was I was getting to sort of like feel people's thoughts and sense just like massively beyond my physical body. And it was really intense. Like I couldn't really, I remember going to a pub in Brixton and I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. Like, I'm everybody in this room at the same time. It's just, it was amazing, but it was also like, whoa, like I need guidance, training here. I need something.
Yeah, I can imagine where mentor. That would be like hard to function.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I actually had to kind of cease with the yoga just to calm things down.
Yeah.
yeah, I did. I mean, I guess it would have been different if I'd been in an ashram in India or something, but I was very much in the world at that point and without the knowledge and the guidance as well. So I was very much looking for that. And I did. I ended up going to India and, yeah, just going to different places and having different experiences and meeting wonderful people. And, all I'd really hoped for. And that was also a big lesson for me as well, is because through doing that and being there, I met, as I said, some amazing human beings, and I really got the taste of what I was searching for. And I know it sounds cliche, you know, like the eat, pray, love kind of thing, but that's exactly what it was. And the other thing, the funny thing was, is that my grandfather, I remember before I went to India for the first time, he'd been stationed in India during the war in 1942 as the commanding officer of the air base in Pune, because obviously Britain ran India at that time. Mm-hmm. And that was actually the place I was going to. I was going to Pune. Oh. And it was one of the places I was going to. Mm. And he pulled me into his study and he said to me, I hope you don't think that you're going to find some holy man in India who's going to, you know, give you a spiritual, knowledge, because they're all charlatans.
Of course. Charlatans.
Yes, charlatans. You won't find anything, anyone there, like that.
Right.
It's all just hocus pocus or whatever. Words to that effect.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, no, I'm not, I'm not going there for that reason. I was thinking, oh, my God, this is crazy, but I'll just play along, act as if. Yeah. But that was exactly the reason I was going to India, was deep spiritual knowledge. Mm. And yeah, I
black absolutely... and white grandfather type thinking.
Yeah, exactly. Oops, sorry, the alarm's going off. There we go. Yeah, I mean, it was a different era, different generation. His whole, reality was just British Empire, right? That's what, that was what he knew. God, what a world. But right. yeah, it's different reality. He was very sweet, though. But yeah, I mean, it's a whole other story, grandfather. He was a hero in a way, decorated and everything, became a wing commander and whatnot. Bless him. Had massive PTSD, which I think a lot of people from wars do. But obviously it was kind of undiagnosed, right?
Right.
Because it wasn't even a thing that's supposed to be a thing.
Right.
But I think it's not to be underestimated. And that's also something I wanted to touch on, was ancestral healing. That's the thing is that like, because we mentioned earlier about witchcraft,
right?
So I mean, I can't say whether or not my genetics, my DNA, whether in the past, my bloodline, whatever, there's been witches or not. There is this, I feel, there is a crossover between the DNA and the bloodline and also past lives and all of that, right? Mm-hmm. Which is part of the kind of intricate orchestration of reality, of the kind of infinite intelligence. But yes, the ancestral healing part is a big thing in terms of multidimensional activation and accelerating our awakening, because that can be stuff that's holding us back, right? What your forefathers and foremothers have experienced in the past can be some things that you're carrying now, and they can be issues, they can be blockages which need to be let go of in order for you to really rise in who you are and fully embody what you're about and your truth. So one of the things for me was just to understand that there's PTSD in my family, and my grandfather had it massively from the war. And it's never really been acknowledged, to be honest, to this day. I even feel a bit naughty even saying it. Can you believe that?
Right.
Right?
I can.
Like, there's like a voice in me going, oh, no, don't say that. You'll bring shame to the family name somewhere in my head, going, oh, my God, So it's actually really important to acknowledge this, that we still have this kind of like shame around all of that sort of stuff. And that's been, another thing that's been really important in my kind of own sort of personal development journey, more recently as well, to really kind of come to terms with that, the kind of PTSD aspect and what may be carried in my own genes and my own DNA. So yeah, I wanted to mention that. And the other thing, of course, is that the witchy aspect or magician or whatever, that obviously there have been many magicians and witches and wizards in this world who've walked this earth in the past. Now, whether I come from a lineage of that, I can't say. But what I can say is there's a fear that, and I recognize and identify that there's a fear of being powerful, of being magical, and of being persecuted for it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is right, and that's in. I mean, that is societal. It's in the consciousness still of like, oh, that's unchristian. That's a devil worship. That's a witch. Burn them.
Yeah,
it's there. It's still very much there, and it's very important to acknowledge that and understand what that is,
mm-hmm.
and see how it may be limiting us.
Right.
So yeah, I wanted to name that in terms of the whole ancestral lineage and healing piece, and how important it is to let go and to resolve and to heal all of that, because it does affect your now. Mm-hmm. And it's very much about freeing you in the now is very much about releasing any of this stuff that's keeping us small, keeping us limited, keeping us fearful, keeping us in doubt, in second guessing ourselves, in our wisdom and our truth and everything else.
Right.
So yeah, that is just, it's actually a huge part. So back to India, So the story, the plot just thickens.
Right. So hold on though. The ancestral healing thing is something that, you know, when you start going down a rabbit hole of enlightenment or anything you want to call it, really, that has anything to do with feelings versus what people tell you is, you know, this is black and this is white, it kind of leads to things like this, especially in this day and age. So, I mean, like what you were talking about is, I mean, it can even be physical. I found like I have a fear for some reason and have since, as far as I can remember, like being a little kid, I had a fear of someone stabbing me in the back for some reason. Like, I don't like to have my back exposed at any point in time almost. And it makes me nervous when it is. And I mean, there's no reason, there's no logical reason whatsoever for me to have a fear of that. I've never had anyone hurt me physically or stab me in the back or do anything like that. So there would be no logical reason unless it's just something somewhere along the line that I, you know, caught on to that's just ancestral, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely worth looking into. It's a kind of a key for you, I think, there's a key there for you.
Right. Yeah. It's, but yeah, I mean, those things. And when you were talking earlier too about, you know, you had to stop doing yoga when I was like 12 or 13 in there somewhere, I got very heavily deep into our religion. And I started having not necessarily ways where I couldn't function, but I just started having scary experiences on my own when I was alone, or should have been alone. And, that caused me to stop doing that as well, because also back to your point about the fear of, you know, because I stopped partially because I didn't have anyone to turn to, because at the time in a religious household, I was afraid of being told I was like possessed or something. And the devil was, you know, had a hand on me or a hold on me or whatever, and them trying to unpossess me basically. So. I just quit. I'm like, I'm done. Whatever that was, I'm done with it. So, yeah, but I mean, you're right. It's things that I experienced that I can't read about really, or you can barely even talk about, you know? So
I
strongly identify with what you're saying. So what happened in India?
So yeah, God. The second time I was in India, well, first time I was, it was about me, particularly healing my heart and also giving myself up to something bigger than myself. So that was the first, kind of baptism, if you will. India has a very strong energy and obviously a very, powerful, unbroken lineage of teachings that go way, way back millennia about self-realization, self-mastery.
Right.
And it is, they call it the Sanata Dharma, which is like the sort of the real true teachings that are set out in the Vedic texts, which are all about enlightenment and self-knowing, really.
And those are things that you got to learn about when you were in India?
So it's okay. So what I'm referring to is the energy of the place, that India just has this energy that, you know, many enlightened masters have walked in that earth and they have been revered. And the Hindu culture is a fair portion of it is to do with kind of veneration. And so there's a lot of beautiful customs and knowledge. And so the space for for this. So I came, you know, I encountered the teachings of one master who'd already kind of left his body, and I was in that space and that energy, and it was extremely powerful. And I learned so much from that. I actually took a new name, and I had many amazing experiences and encounters. And I went back like a couple of years later and went deeper. And so I met someone there who's actually American. And that was a huge thing, because what happened is I had my own awakening experience where it is called a Satori. It's like a glimpse of the infinite or a glimpse of enlightenment. And to cut a long story short, because this is a multifaceted reality we're dealing with here, I had this glimpse, and I was kind of walking around in a cloud of bliss for a couple of weeks, and it was amazing. And it felt like, okay, this is it. Like, I found myself. Mm-hmm. And I was still a functioning human being doing things, but just in this blissful state. It gradually wore off over time. But through my encounters, meetings, experiences with a certain person who was a teacher for me at that time, it really showed me that actually enlightenment is for everyone, and that we very much, although it's great to honor those who've come before us, and the saints and the truly enlightened beings who've walked the earth, we are all that. And that we're all capable. We all have that in our essence to really fully know ourselves as that kind of infinite wisdom, infinite knowledge, infinite consciousness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. My mother is still, her and I, because I mean, we're still a fairly open-minded family. And have always been for the most part, but my mother is still clings to like our traditional Christian beliefs, basically.
Mm.
And my brother and I have both tried to tell her that Jesus was essentially just a human being like her and I that was enlightened, essentially. And I try to tell her that all the time. And she's like, yeah, so we go back and forth on that. And she's like, no, just your definition, you know, of the word, I suppose.
Mm.
Like we were saying.
Sure. Well, it can keep you safe and small thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
As yeah. in your like limited self,
yeah,
nice and safe in your cage and small.
Yeah. 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 And I found that, people in my mother's general, like, I mean, over here in the United States anyways, I haven't spoken to a lot of people over in other countries that are in her age range, but I have found that people in her age range tend to do things like that, like just cling to things that they've been taught their whole lives, and they want to believe it, you know, so bad, just to feel comfortable. Which, I mean, we all do to some degree, I think.
Sure.
We all absolutely want to feel comfortable.
Yeah, the certain, right? Clinging to the certain.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, suffering can be a comfortable coat to wear, even though it's very heavy.
Right.
So extremely heavy, weighing you down, you know. Yeah. But, you know, at least I'm kind of covered.
Yeah, at least I'm used to this. It's okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, so I mean, there's a lot that can be said about that, but right. I think, I mean, the the kind of crux of what I'm talking about here is that, you know, it became obvious to me that, you know, it, as I said before, enlightenment is for everyone.
Yeah.
That everyone can experience this, and that this is our true nature. And, you know, I felt so blessed, but also, I mean, I was, you know, high as a kite, if you will. And it came through my body. So it was, again, it was like a Kundalini experience. It came through my body and I had no reference points for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when I eventually went back home to the UK, I was in a bit of a pickle because I didn't have enough life experience to be able to integrate it. So that was just where I was, right? I mean, it's just, that's how it was.
Right.
There's no kind of good or bad in that now, the way I look at it now.
Yeah.
It's no good or bad. It's just like, I had this like incredible time and this experience of knowing kind of my true nature. And then, as I said, it kind of went away and I was left with memory of it and like understandings, but the integration and the groundedness weren't there. So that was the new kind of learning that I had to go through, was how to integrate and ground this into my daily life and my daily reality. That was big. It was like that was a baptism of fire, actually. Yeah.
No, I bet.
And also the reverse culture shock of coming back to the Western civilization as well.
Yeah, I get it. So two things. What is Kundalini?
So Kundalini is the name, that the Sanskrit name, which is the ancient language of India. That are one of the ancient languages of India, the main one,
yeah,
that most of the current Indian languages are kind of rooted from. Mm-hmm. And Kundalini is kind of typically symbolized as like a snake-like energy that raises up the spine, or rises rather, up the spine, from the base of the spine, going up to the head and finally out through the top of the head. And it's something that through spiritual practice, spiritual work, meditation, yoga, etc., that you activate and you raise upwards. So, and it, I mean, it can come in different experiences and different ways, and it's often kind of also associated with kind of fire as well. Kind of a fiery energy. It's just like that kind of fire of transformation, that burns all that is that needs to go. So yeah, that's Kundalini. Okay. And it's much more than what I've said. I mean, whole books have been written about Kundalini.
Okay.
But yeah, that's in a nutshell, that's what the Kundalini is.
Okay. And then earlier you said you took on another name. What did you mean by that?
So, yeah. So, you know, there are traditions of learning and being an adept, et cetera, which involve taking on another name. And through that taking the name, you let go of like the old identity, or you're able to see your old identity more by having a new name. So it's a teaching device. Yeah.
Interesting.
And actually a very powerful one.
Yeah. It sounds, yeah. I've heard of people, I mean, this sounds similar to kind of a thing that they do in therapy or psychology sometimes, where they have you sit in a chair and pretend as if you're talking to yourself. But you're looking at yourself and, you know, you have to like visualize everything the same, basically. and then separate that self from the person talking, essentially.
Yeah, the kind of gestalt thing. Yeah, so that, yeah, it's similar. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's getting outside of yourself.
Right.
To kind of see yourself from a new perspective and identify with a new, awareness. Mm-hmm. Obviously in the India, the traditions of India, it's usually a Sanskrit name. Mm-hmm. So I used that for a few years. I have a couple of friends who still might call me it. I quite like it, actually. It's quite nice to be reminded, you know.
Oh, I bet,
because especially. We do attach meaning and identity to names. So, it's a different feeling.
For sure.
So, you were saying?
Well, you mentioned that you had come back and kind of had to go through the whole culture shock again, and you weren't, and then figure out how to incorporate all of this into your everyday life. So how did you do that process? How did you go through that?
Yeah, great question. I ended up going to university, and
really,
it was interesting because it's very hard to kind of integrate all of that.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that would be like the last place I would want to go if I had just gone through like a whole spiritual awakening and found out everything that you probably found out.
Didn't know what to do with my life. And I knew that I was interested in creativity and self-expression. Mm-hmm. I was more at that point, less so much into the health and the healing, which I'd been in earlier. And more into, I just want to find this creative thread and figure all that is out. And, there were these courses and at that time education was free in the UK. Mm. So it was, and they actually paid you money to go to university. So it was a pretty attractive option.
Right. Yeah. Now I can more understand. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what to do with my life. Oh, well, why don't you go to university?
Right. Exactly.
They'll pay you money and you'll learn things and get a qualification at the end of it. So
that doesn't work the same here in the US at all.
No. I know. And no longer work like that here in the UK either, although they do have grant help for certain people, means tested and all that. But right. In general, people come away with, $40,000 debt or whatever.
Same.
So that's what happened, and it wasn't. I'm not going to say it was easy because it wasn't. Especially if after having had such profound experiences, and definitely felt a sense of disconnect and some loneliness. Because then that's the other thing is that I learned is about having community, like the power of having community that is on the same wavelength as you is huge.
Right.
Because if you don't have that, you do get held back.
Right.
And spiritually I felt very inhibited really during that time because I was interacting with people on a daily basis who, that was just not their reality at all. So I know I was learning as well through that. That kind of brought it home to me how key having community is in a spirit. If you're a spiritual person, then to have that spiritual community is so important, to help you unfold and find your truth. So, that became clearer and clearer to me. But then I ended up going. So I had the opportunity to do like a study abroad placement, and I ended up going to the wonderful city of Barcelona, and ended up staying there for 8 years.
Wow!
Yeah, it was quite a journey. And there again, I found my community. Mm-hmm. Learned the language and Yeah, it was great. It was fabulous. I did a lot of different things when I was there. And Oh, I always look back on that time as just like, God, that was just, I had it so good.
Right. What were you doing in Spain?
So first of all, I was working as an actor. Worked for about two or three different theatre companies, doing plays in schools and that kind of thing. It was my first time, you know, acting actually.
Right.
And I just literally found a job doing it the summer after I graduated. And it was a lot of fun. And I got to kind of travel all over Spain and it was great. And play, you know.
Yeah.
Play a lot. And it was like a dream come true in a way, doing that, having that opportunity.
Right.
And yeah, so I was doing that for two or three years, and then it was kind of like, kind of a bit bored with this now, because it was kind of the same kind of thing. And ended up working for a guy who was had an entrepreneur, a British entrepreneur, who was a publisher as well, who'd kind of created a methodology for learning the verbs in different languages. And I ended up working with him to begin with, and then collaborating with him, helping him commercialize his work internationally, helped him get a deal with a major US publisher as well, which was great. It was my first time going to the US actually, which is pretty cool. yeah. And what was that company called? It's not McGraw-Hill. It's like the biggest sort of educational publisher in the US, or one of the three biggest or whatever.
Huh.
Yeah.
The company that you helped him sell was?
Yeah. Sell to. Yeah. Sell his kind of idea to.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. I was really pleased with myself for doing that. He was over the moon as well.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah. And also helped him commercialize it to other countries in Europe and get it translated in different languages and stuff. And it's really interesting. I have a love of languages. So it was interesting work for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, helped him for a few years. Actually, literally today, I just wrote a recommendation for him on LinkedIn.
Oh.
Yeah. Literally today. Yeah.
How long have you known him now?
About 16 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was your first recommendation for him, like ever?
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things, right? I think I spoke on the phone with him last week, and I was like, what are you up to? How are you doing? I told him what I'm up to and everything.
Yeah.
And then it's just like, oh, actually, because, you know, I'm still working out how to do LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd connected again through LinkedIn. So I was like, oh, why don't I give you a recommendation? You know, so that's how that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, yeah, I'm really happy to give you a recommendation. You know, I'd love to actually, because you know, I've seen your whole journey, right? From this little startup working in his like a home office where I used to go to work, to kind of where he is now with like, he's in talks with Disney making this film and a game, like an educational game and stuff. So,
oh yeah, Disney's they're getting really big into games. It seems like,
are they?
It seems like with like VR and the advancements of that, it seems like a whole lot of people are actually like, I'm even in like some copywriting circles that are talking about the future of storytelling in gaming.
And
it seems like the bigger companies, I guess, are starting to kind of focus in that direction. Which is a whole other interesting scenario.
You know? Well, I mean, it's inevitable, isn't it? You're talking about like sort of, you know, sort of virtual reality gaming and all that sort of stuff. That's obviously going to happen. That there's that Ready Player One film that I watched half of the other day. And it was just like, oh my God, yeah, that is pretty much a pretty probable timeline in terms of like, especially what young people will be doing, because the technology will just get so incredibly impressive that you just wouldn't want to miss out on playing some of those games, if they're so like realistic and everything, like these sort of real realistic environments. And of course you can learn skills through them as well, you know, and problem solving and strategy or whatever, right? So
I'm in a Facebook group where someone the other day, it's a copywriting group, but someone the other day was asking what the favorite movie or something like that was. And I had to say Avatar, but honestly, the only reason that's even my favorite movie or in the top category is because when we went to Disney World last year, they have a Pandora ride that's from the movie Avatar. And like we came out of that ride and I was crying because it was just a gorgeous, beautiful experience. And so, yeah, Disney in general is very good at storytelling, but then you add in that extra component of like putting your physical body into an experience like that, just like with VR. And it just does something completely new and different to your brain, I think. And I would love to see like MRI scans or something of people in VR. Because I think it would be so interesting.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, funny you mentioned Avatar because... And I think one of the reasons why that movie is so popular is because it does give us a suggestion, a glimpse perhaps, of the reality that we live in, right? Yes. Because if you talk about reincarnation and about being a soul, having a human experience, that is, you know, very much like what's going on in the Avatar movie when he, you know, becomes the Avatar. And yeah, I think it resonates with people on a really deep level that is, and also that, that the kind of the Avatar world where everything is connected and the nature and everything, it's like, that is actually the magical reality we live in.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. That's another reason that I like that movie. And another one that I like because of those reasons is A Wrinkle in Time.
I don't know it.
Again, was made by Disney. It was actually a book, and I never got to read the book, but it just, the way that they did the movie explained to me what things are actually happening, but it's just in a way that I can better understand it. And every time I mention this to someone else, I don't think that they perceive it the same way that I did for some reason. But yeah, it basically is talking about how like love is the frequency of the universe. And you can use that frequency to kind of transcend or move throughout different places or fields of being, something that's like super, super deep that I don't honestly completely understand yet, but I'm working in that direction. And so... Yeah, that was one of the first movies that really turned me on to combining what I logically know and what I can't explain, basically.
So I hear you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that question is it just a pretty idea that we like to believe, or is it touching something deeper in us that already knows that?
That's a doozy of a question.
That is a doozy of a question.
Yeah. But yeah, so, and experiences, you know, as well are, like you said, just things that matter. And I can't really put into words why experiences are so important when I try to explain this to people. Because, you know, my husband and I, like, one of the things that my husband and I talk about often are like our love languages and like quality time and physical are the closest that I can describe my love languages being. But to me, it's more about the experience as a whole, which if you were to combine those two, it's an experience. And that's what I really, really like. That's what does it for me. And so he is like words of affirmation and acts of service. But it's in a very tangible way for him. And it's just not as tangible for me sometimes. And so it's quite interesting for he and I to have these discussions, you know, and me to try to explain things to him when he has such a need for tangibility and physical things that he can see and understand, you know?
Ah, yeah. Tangibility. That's a big one, isn't it?
Right. Yes, it is.
For sure. Yeah. And that's, yeah, I guess in some ways is the thread of what we've been talking about in mm-hmm. this conversation.
Right.
The kind of the, what is the tangibility of things?
Yes, exactly.
But yeah. And it always, as I said, it always comes back to me to the direct experience. And I guess it's opening oneself up to that experience and being available for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel, I guess that, you know, that time in India, I was just very available. I was really ready. I was so ready.
Mm-hmm.
So ready. So, you know, obviously there's also, you know, I was going to see spiritual teachers and stuff during this time, you know, when I was back in the UK, and as much as I could, right, lapping up as much of that environment was possible within what I was doing, and also when I was in Barcelona as well.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, and it was actually a Kundalini yoga studio very close to where I lived. So that was happening, you know, whilst I was going off and doing the acting and stuff. That this was all still going on,
right? Doing, sounds like it.
Doing all of this other stuff, right? Just going deeper,
mm-hmm.
And learning. Right. And learning and learning. So, well, God, 8 years I was there. So I ended up doing dropping out of doing the publishing sales and all of that, because it was just something I was kind of moving away from, and I ended up actually starting a business doing with a friend I met on the beach who's Dutch. In fact, I was chatting with him today as well on WhatsApp. And we ended up doing a nightlife business. I mean,
what? I'm so confused now.
Well, what happened is that I got offered a job selling tickets on the beach, because Barcelona has a beach and it's busy like 6 months of the year.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I was in a place where I was like, I need to earn some money fast. And this was literally like, well, why don't you try this? Like, I met this person and they were like, yeah, like I sell tickets on the beach and I make like 100 euros in, you know, 3 hours. And I was like, oh, I give that a go, you know?
Right.
And, just like be on the beach, you know, beach life, you know, be in the sun and, you know, practice my languages and stuff. And I found out I was pretty good at it. And so what happened is that I was just doing that like for a few days a week and pretty much enjoying it and meeting a lot of different people from around the world, which is great. Right. And then it was like, oh, well, you could like set up a guest list at like one of these nightclubs and kind of like touristy kind of nightclubs, and you know, also give you money if people just say the name of the guest list. If they go into the nightclub, you know, they want to go in for free or whatever. So it's like, oh, all right, then that sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happened is that, you know, and I met this other guy who was like doing tickets on the beach, and he was really into internet marketing and like learning from on these different forums and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been like looking a little bit into that. And so, yeah, we kind of figured. So what happened is that my friend had like got Michael, he'd kind of got these lists at these clubs, and he was targeting American abroad students, study abroad students. And yeah, it was like that fall semester kind of thing. And they were all like coming. And so it was, oh, let's just like, yeah, focusing on American students. And so we did. And it was just like literally just like friend requesting and friend request, going and finding like the different programs in the city, because there were loads. Because actually, so of I know this is massively tangential, but it's kind of interesting as well. A fair few scores of thousands of American students come over to Europe every year for different programs, study abroad programs. And London is a big place, and so is Barcelona, and so is, I think it's Florence as well. They're like the three, you get like thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of Americans coming for a semester. And it's great for them. It's amazing. I mean, it's like time of their lives. Kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just sent my middle schooler on a trip like that. And oh, absolutely.
Right. So, and they come and generally they're quite, you know, they're kids that are, you know, fairly well off. Right. Mm-hmm. Maybe some of them have got like mommy and daddy's credit card as well. Wow. So, which is great. You know, they get to have the, you know, spend the high life and, you know, really experience like something completely different to what they're used to in the States. Mm-hmm. And so yeah, we were like, yeah, then they're really nice. So
right, of course. Yeah.
So it was like, well, this is great. This is win-win. And so yeah, we did that, and we were literally doing that for about 18 months, maybe 2 years. And I was doing that on the side, and I was also starting my own like online marketing consulting business, trying to get clients, like local Spanish business clients, and was succeeding in some ways and failing in others. But it was this excitement, because it was like, oh my God, the internet! Like it was like I can make money on the internet and do all this stuff as well, and amazing, you know, and offer services through the internet. And, It was like a big, it was like, oh my God, this is the thing. I've got to do this. And it's like, and I was dreaming I could go traveling again and do it while I'm traveling and all of that.
Right.
So ticked lots of boxes. In the end, the whole kind of, the whole nightlife thing got to be a lot of work. And also it ended up that I had to kind of be out late. Right. So, in the end, you know, and I moved house, and it was one of these classic manifestation things which you hear about, which was like, so I was listening to Abraham Hicks a lot. So, I was living this total double life where in the daytime I was going and meeting my spiritual friends and, you know, doing this and doing that and doing some consulting. And then in the evenings, I was going off to like a nightclub, and I was, you know, maybe in a cafe outside with my computer, and then going in and checking the numbers and all this kind of stuff. And then like being in the VIP and then getting people like, you know, bottles and champagne and cava and stuff and socializing.
That sounds exhausting.
Yeah, it was exhausting. So it was just like coming home at 5 a.m. and sort of going sleeping for 5 hours and then getting up and doing it all over again.
Wow.
Yeah, it was intense. Anyway, I moved into this amazing house with these gorgeous people. And what I'd done is I found myself homeless at one point, because I don't know, whatever happened, I had to move out because the flat we were renting was God knows what, like, I don't know. And I literally had nowhere to go and didn't have enough time to sort anything out and busy with this work and everything. So I ended up sleeping in the living room of my ex-girlfriend's apartment and with like a shared house. She was in a shared apartment.
That doesn't sound awkward at all.
No, not awkward at all. So it was at that point that I really got into the law of attraction stuff. It's like, okay, I'm going to create the reality I want, not this situation.
Right.
And I typed out like the place I'm going to live in and the house and what it's going to look like and the view I'm going to have from my window and the kind of people I'm going to be with and everything. And I printed it out, put it on my after a month or so, I was able to move into a small little room in this apartment. because someone had gone off for a couple of months or whatever. So I was in there, but it was obviously it was less than ideal. And I had this real vision of this place. Anyway, literally like maybe a month or two later, I found a place online and I went to it, and it was just like a marriage made in heaven. The couple that were living there were absolutely glorious and amazing. And we all shared the same values and everything. And I just like literally moved in like the next day, and I found myself in this room, and it was amazing. And then I found the printout after I moved, like a month later, I found the printed out piece of paper, and I read what I'd typed out all that time ago. And I'd been like meditating on every day, and it was exactly like the place I'd moved into. And nice. Like the view out of my window was just, you know, this green valley, and the sort of sense of community in the house, the whole thing was just as I'd envisioned it.
Yeah.
And that was a really big lesson for me of kind of the power of my consciousness as well, and visualization and having an intention. So that was really interesting. Anyway.
You hear about things. I hear about things like that. And it's just that whole experience on its own is interesting as a whole.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. The fact that manifestation is an actual thing is,
yeah,
just blows my mind.
It is. I mean, it's completely mind blowing because it's nothing to do with what we've been taught in school and society and the media and everything else. It's completely the opposite. So the logical kind of mind, rational mind goes, well, this is impossible. This is ridiculous. And then you actually experience it and you go, oh my God, this is real.
Right.
Well, why hasn't anyone told me about this? Oh yeah, my friend did. But still, like, why didn't they teach me this in school? Like,
yeah,
what's going
on? No one told me.
Set up, you know, life can be so easy, and yet it's, you know, so interesting. So yeah, and so I was in this weird kind of contrast between, I was living in this amazing house, these amazing people, and just had great stuff happening there, and then at the same time doing this sort of night life work, and anyway, it all kind of came to a head when someone moved in who was a very lovely woman, and we ended up falling in love, and she was American, by the way, and she had a completely different take on things and was like, oh, this nightlife thing's not happening anymore.
Right.
No. You're not doing that anymore. So I stopped doing that. And it was actually a massive relief. It was just like, oh my God, actually, yeah. It was just like a lot of hard work actually, and interesting, but no. So that was great. So I focused on the kind of internet online consulting stuff. And at the same time, So there's another thread. So I did a rebirthing breathwork training with Leonard Orr in the south of Spain in Andalusia. He's the guy who kind of founded, invented rebirthing breathwork, American. And he recently passed away, actually. And that was amazing. And so what happened when I was doing that was that I had an extra dimensional, an out-of-body experience whilst I was in the hot tub on the third week, where you kind of progress through doing kind of dry rebirthing breath work. We're just like literally doing breath work on a mattress, to going into a cold water tub and doing breath work in cold water, and then hot water. And that was the third week, was doing it in hot water. And I was assisted by two lovely people. And I went, and you literally breathe through a tube as well. So it's a snorkel. So I'm doing this thing and I'm underwater, and about a couple of minutes into it, I'm just feeling amazing in this warm water. And it's kind of like, it's meant to kind of recreate the womb conditions, and it can really help with kind of releasing birth trauma and that kind of thing. Anyway, did I go back to the womb? No. Where did I go? I went into the cosmic womb. I was straight out of my body. I was in a realm that I knew to be serious. It was a feeling of the most incredible divine oneness love. And I was meeting with these beings that were translucent, taller than me. I knew them. They were family. They are family. And it was homecoming. It was homecoming time. It was like, oh, where have you been away for a long, oh God, you guys. Oh, it was that kind of, oh, like that. And this immense sense of love and unity and no separation. And just this deep knowing. And I mean, I just, words do not do it justice. It's just like, how do you just, yeah, explain something like that, describe it, giving it any, doing it any justice. Mm-hmm. I came back to, like, I got tapped on the leg and it's like the end of the session, come, you know, come back and come out of the water. And I was like, oh, back in this place. Okay. Whoa. Right.
Right.
Oh, it's this game, is it? All right. Yeah. Being human. Okay. Mm-hmm. So, and I struggled to kind of recount the experience, but, I did to those two people and then to the group, larger group at the end of the day. And there was a little pause and then Leonard responded, well, yeah, that was interesting experience. It wouldn't be the first time I've heard people having experiences like that.
Right.
So that was nice kind of validation and recognition. That, you know, the white coats aren't coming for me yet.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Because you have anything kind of, any kind of experience like that, and then you think, well, people might just think I've lost the plot completely and I'm having schizophrenic delusions.
Yeah.
But no, this is just a different reality, a multidimensional reality.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But what happened at that point was that it really kind of reconnected with me with my kind of healing gifts. And so I started to kind of give healing again. And what happened is that the beings in Sirius were present, not visually, physically, but definitely in a kind of energetic way that I could sense them, and they were helping with the healing. So then the people who I gave healings to said, yeah, I felt hands on me that, were you there? No, I wasn't there.
Right.
I wasn't touching. I wasn't. I was sitting in this chair the whole time. So, and just real, like, deep senses of peace and, like, oneness people were experiencing. So this was like, wow, big wows. And so that happened. And so the name came to me, Vortex Alignment. And that's what I currently call the healing, energy healing I do. So, yeah. So that's a little snapshot of that. With this lover of mine, I ended up, she had to go back to the States and due to visa stuff. So right. I ended up actually just packing up and leaving Barcelona completely to meet her in the States and be trying to kind of make some, you know, make it happen, let it happen, whatever, follow it through.
Yeah,
it ended up not working out, but in a amicable way. But what happened is I ended up meeting her spiritual teacher and having another incredible bliss filled love out of body experience. And this is in San Ramon, outside of San Francisco. So I mean, I'm really just giving you the highlights here, because, you know, otherwise we'd just be on here for all day, all night,
right?
So I am actually gonna, you know, I'm writing about this in a book. But yeah, so I ended up like realizing this spiritual teacher was my guru and that I needed to go where this person was going. And so I ended, basically within a few weeks, I was back in India at their ashram, the spiritual community of about 3,000 people. And I intended to be there for a month and ended up staying there for 18 months.
Wow.
And it was amazing. It was just such a divine, grace-filled time. I learned a lot about myself, about discipline, about devotion, and ended up coming back after that time to the UK again. Really, this time with really massive reverse culture shock.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, like next level reverse culture shock.
Yeah.
And then it was another kind of like, oh, right, what do I do now? Like, who am I now? What am I going to do with my life? Like, and the only thing I could connect with was expressing myself and acting. I wasn't feeling like anything else that I'd tried or did. It was like, no, actually somehow acting. So what I ended up doing was going to drama school and doing a 2-year intensive drama school in London. And after about 4 years of really hacking at it, trying to work in the industry as an actor and having some successes and a lot of failures and experiencing rejection on a weekly basis, as you do as an actor.
Right.
Castings and, you're not the right fit for this role. And there's another 50 people who might be. It was rather, soul-destroying in a way, but loved actually performing and acting. And I ended up doing a comedy show, which I have written a book about. I was in 2018. I did that show in the Edinburgh Fringe Festival, which is this biggest arts festival in the world. It happens in Edinburgh in Scotland every year, although not this year. Surprise, surprise. And I just published a book about that, which is called Fool's Gold. And that was just it's like a let's write a book. Let's do something. Write something easy like that. I can just talk about from memory, and it's not too consuming. So it's a little book I published on Kindle. I'm gonna put it on paperback soon. So that happened. But after like 4 years of hacking at it, doing this, I came up through divine synchronicity, actually. I came across a speaker's academy, and started going to that and realized public speaking was an amazing thing. And it was actually something I got really excited about. And my first time up there on stage, I started talking about my spiritual experience, and the feeling in the room was palpable. The interest and inspiration in people's eyes really spoke to me, and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. I want more of this. Like, I'm meant to be doing this. So that started happening. I started going weekly to that. And then I got some coaching and mentoring, and it came basically through that I needed to go back to holding space for people, healing people and coaching them. So I transitioned into that, and that's now almost 18 months ago that I was like, right, I'm going to start coaching people. And that's what happened. So obviously the speaking thing is a bit of a funny one, because there are no really in-person events and stuff.
Right.
So I actually set up a podcast, which you probably know about, the Flow Ninja podcast, and it's doing interviews with people, comedy, consciousness, creativity, and well-being, because they're all subjects that I really enjoy and wanted to explore more about. So that's been going on, and that's been really interesting. But yeah, the coaching thing really has been the vocation, the calling that has been what has said yes, basically. This is the next level for Jody Dean, is holding space for others, helping be the agent for people's own personal transformation and coming into contact with their own spirituality, activating again the multidimensional aspects of who we are, learning to speak our truth and really step into the purpose of why we're here and what we're about, and really step up on that in that way, in this kind of awakening journey that the whole planet is going through. Right. So yeah, in a nutshell, I guess that is, yeah, what it's been the last 18 months. And it's just being walking deeper into this kind of river. You know, first it was just like, I put my toe in the water and then, you know, get my foot in and then legs. And now I'm swimming in it, you know, and right. actually kind of letting the current kind of take me. Really. Mm-hmm. And just, yeah. And life is serving me up, more helpings, and yeah. Yeah. It's an eternally unfolding adventure that mm-hmm. makes more sense each day that goes by, because on the one hand, I get to use my, you know, my skills around communication and expression with things like this, talking on a podcast like this, and then on the other side, my healing and space holding abilities to really enable, you know, those who wish to kind of step forward in their lives and take the action that's necessary to become who they're born to be and mm-hmm. get really fully into, you know, this awakening and let go of that which holds them back. And again, that's, you know, the ancestral stuff, you know, that could be something that I work with a client, is the, you know, the ancestral healing side. And this is something I focus on as well, is the five elements. And that is something that came to me last year. And it's a through line also that's been around since I was about 20, because the shiatsu system, which is the Japanese acupressure, is kind of based on Chinese traditional medicine, and they work with the five elements, as does Ayurveda, and the Tibetan tradition as well. Mm-hmm. And these five elements I work with are earth, air, fire, water, and ether. And they are these wonderful principles that are in and with everything, and they teach us so much, and they are qualities which we can learn from, and they are expressed in our personality, in our bodies, in what we do, in the environment, and they work together, and it's about finding balance and, yes, peace and harmony with the elements, the five elements. Right. So that's something that's become central, and that's also been like a download to work with these elements with people. So yeah.
Yeah, well, that is quite a journey to where you are now.
Yeah.
Quite a different journey.
it's like every time I talk about this, and increasingly a lot, I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually, you know, not even giving the, you know, like even a quarter of the story, because there is so much, there's so many nuances to everything. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, oh my God, like I've done a disservice, but you know, because you just can't fit it all into a couple of hours, yeah. You know, it's just
which,
like,
is why the book, right?
Yeah. The book has to happen. The books have to happen.
For sure. So you mentioned that you're writing the book. Do you have a title yet for when it comes out?
Yeah, the book is called Back to Spirit. That's the working title.
Perfect.
And it's kind of telling my story it's using my story really as a device to teach about connecting with spirit and connecting with that which is bigger than ourselves and our multidimensional magnificence, ultimately. You know, so I mean, here are some themes really that I work with. So the heart, yeah, leading from the heart, healing the heart, flow, you know, moving into flow out of resistance, mm-hmm. Resilience, and the, you know, the agility, developing that muscle of agility and anti-fragility, developing the intuition, yeah. Mastering mindset. Expanding our consciousness, a fifth dimensional living, creativity, as I've already mentioned, ancestral healing, ascension, understanding what ascension is and where you are with ascension and experiencing ascension, like
right.
Actually having the direct experience of what that is and the quickening, as it were, of your frequency.
Those are, yeah, all things that I'm interested in, and I'm hoping that the listeners are probably interested in as well.
That's the hope. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if anybody did want to contact you for your coaching services, how could they do that?
Well, the quickest way to get me is just to email me, Jody, J-O-D-Y, consulting@gmail.com. Yeah, that's the direct line. Obviously, don't give it out to weirdos and perverts. I know you won't, you lovely listeners.
No.
But do email me if you're interested in having a conversation with me and, you know, looking at how I might be able to help you. Absolutely. And, you know, I do one-on-one coaching and I do a group coaching program as well. I also lead detoxes. And this is something just because it is so powerful and useful and it does help us energetically shift as well to release the toxins in the body. So I do that as well. I've just run one actually, which was phenomenal. It was the first one I've done as a group and loved it. Absolutely loved it. It was a real joy and had such great feedback from the participants as well. So really pleased.
That's awesome. What do you mean detox? Like food and things?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually like a literal fasting kind of protocol with detoxification and supplements. So it involves a liquids-only fast. It involves intermittent fasting. It involves taking some certain prescribed supplements, and then an optional water fast at the end as well for the, you know, the hardcore who want to take it that little bit further and test their limits.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Hmm. And it's very, okay. So the effects of doing this are very energizing, increased mental clarity, a greater sense of vitality, losing weight, losing aches and pains. Yeah, these are some of the benefits.
Well, this has been phenomenal. We have gone on for 2 hours almost now with a couple of technical difficulties here and there. But I really appreciate you coming on. Was there anything else in particular that you wanted to share with our listeners today?
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you're interested as a listener in anything that I've shared and you have, you know, curiosity, then do get in touch. You can also download my free report that I have, which is about kind of hacking your flow, which is at go.flowninja.co. Quite easy, that one, go.flowninja.co. Yeah, and you know, find me on Facebook if you want to. I'm there. Also on all the platforms, really, Instagram and LinkedIn and all of that. So whatever your chosen one is, then just you know, feel free to message me or say hello. And as I said, I gave you my email address before. So that's what I say. And I also want to say just the other thing about mindset, because a lot of what I'm about is mindset. Because it's the daily kind of agility of having on the one hand, the discipline to kind of follow through with your commitments of what you want to create in this life. And also just the, you know, developing the values and principles of things like integrity, authenticity, honesty, resilience, and being courageous ultimately. Right. And that is a daily practice that requires requires vigilance and consistency and persistence. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to talk about and difficult to do. And these are the things that, you know, me kind of me what you know it boils down to is what I've just spoken about, that these you know attributes of mindset that help get us through the uncertainty, the doubt, the fear, the trauma, and help us work through that. And it's through developing this kind of consistency and this daily application of these principles that will pull us through anything and help you get anywhere you need to go, wherever that is, whether you want to create, you know, a six-figure business or whether you just want to have a freedom lifestyle and or want to write a book or follow your passion in whatever way that is, and or step into, you know, the real you in terms of being a leader and being a visionary and creating the impact in the world that maybe you know want to create. Maybe you want to, you know, build orphanages, or you want to create healing sanctuaries around the planet. You know, whatever that is, you're going to have things in the way, and that's the shadow, that's the small self, the trauma and the past hurts and belief systems that will be holding you back. And so, you know, I really help with busting through all of that and releasing and letting go, so we can really like open and spread our wings and be, you know, the amazing gifts that we are to this planet. Because I believe that anyone who's listening to this podcast is a gift to this planet, and you are here for a purpose. You're here for a reason. You are unique. You have a mission, and it's time, you know, now is the time. You know, if you think it's, you know, oh, next year I'll be ready, it's probably a lie that you're telling yourself. Now is the time. You're always ready. Mm-hmm. And the world needs you. It needs your gifts. It needs your poetry. It needs your heart.
Yep. That's phenomenal. Yep. I concur. Thank you for that.
You're absolutely welcome. Mm. Thank you, Catherine, for your, yeah, for holding space, for your interview style, and yeah, for inviting me.
Oh, of course. Absolutely. I'd love to have you on again sometime, because we clearly have barely begun to scratch the surface.
Yeah, I know. I know. Yeah. Yeah. I'd love to.
Wonderful. All right. Well, for tonight, thank you so much for joining me again, and for all of your wisdom and storytelling. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
Absolutely.
My pleasure. My absolute pleasure.
You have been listening to the Teachable Soul podcast. You can find us on any social media platform, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram as The Teachable Soul, or on Twitter as Teachable Soul. Also, if you'd like to help support the show, you can find us at patreon.com/theteachablesoul. You can also visit our website for more information at theteachablesoul.com.